Assess Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network studios.
Okay, so last night, about a half hour into the draft, right after the Suns picked Dragan Bender, this guy puts out a tweet saying, "I'm going to bring the heat on the Brad Sesmatch show." By the way, I'm Jeff Munn, Arizona State women's basketball radio play-by-play voice, and general, just I'll pick up a paycheck wherever I can find it guy. Greg Esposito, formerly of the Suns. You heard him on that show that I love the show, can't stand the name, Sips. John Bloom, you've got to change that next year. And a guy who is really dialed into things going on in the NBA and with the Suns in particular. And we welcome you to the Brad Sesmatch Show. I'm going to let him roll here in a second. This is a draft recap type show, although we will have Bill Gutekunst, AZ Central film critic, today. But let me get to the news, and I'm going to let Greg go here. I'm sure you know by now the particulars of the draft. Ben Simmons 1, Brandon Ingram 2. The Suns taking Dragan Bender at 4, and then getting Marquese Chris after the Kings take him at 8. The Suns cut a deal to send 13 and 28 to Sacramento. 13 and 28? Was it 28?
Yes.
Thank you. It was a long night last night. 13 and 28 plus Bogdan Bogdanovic to Sacramento for the pick that turned into Marquese Chris. And they took Tyler Ulis, the guard from Kentucky, in the second round. We'll have Earl Watson to talk about the picks. So there's the news of the day. But I did get this tweet right after the Bender pick that said, "Greg's bringing the heat." So at this point, I'm done for the next couple minutes. Greg, bring the heat.
I got to tell you, it feels great to be unchained. Last night was the first big event that I wasn't an employee of the Suns, and I could say anything I wanted, and it was fabulous. Let me tell you that much.
Mark this down, kids, because here it comes.
Last night was a defining moment for the Suns franchise, and I entered it worrying that it was going to be on the other side of the scales. I was afraid that we were going to look at this and we were going to go, you know what? We now know that the Suns are once again trying to retool this franchise and not actually rebuild. They pleasantly surprised me, and that was fantastic because this is a full-on rebuild. And you know what that tells me? It tells me Ryan McDonough is 100% calling the shots. Now, this isn't Robert Sarver trying to impose his will and Ryan McDonough trying to make the best of it. Ryan McDonough is calling the shots here. They are not under an edict to try to make the playoffs next year. They are under an edict to try to build a true championship contender. Now, will it happen? I don't know. This is one of the youngest teams you'll ever see in the NBA, but they now have an immense amount of potential.
Well, and one of the things, and we've been saying this in the shows that I've done leading up to the draft. We had Tim Kempton on last week, one of the shows I filled in on, and Kempton said, "I'd really like to see them hang on to the picks and go young." And I was in the same camp. Now, they didn't hold on to all the picks because financially it's kind of hard to get 3 first-rounders in, and you'd really be really young at that point. But I agree with you in the sense that I'll admit you're a lot higher on Dragan Bender right now than I was. And I saw the film of him last night after the pick, and the only thing that I could determine was I didn't see quite the correlation between him or the comparison to Dirk Nowitzki. And I'm a little, and again, a half a minute of tape is not a fair evaluation. But watching him, I thought, is he really as quick as some people make him out to be? Not fast, but quick. But I will say this, I know how excited you are about him. When they made the pick of Bender, I thought, oh no.
Well, you're not alone.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people on Twitter that felt that way. What I like about Bender, and I think the Dirk comparisons are lazy because he's a European guy that's 7 foot and can shoot, all right? So let's go with Dirk comparisons.
Right.
Very lazy by some people. I like that he is a truly unique talent. And when you watch the film, I'll be honest, it's somewhat underwhelming because you want to see explosiveness. You want to see athleticism. You want to see what Marquese Chris looks like on tape because we live in a world that wants 7 seconds of excitement, and Marquese Chris can bring that in a clip.
Right.
You're not going to see that from Dragan Bender, but he can handle the ball. He's got quick enough feet to switch on the pick and roll. He can shoot the three at 7'1", and he has a 7'2 wingspan, and he has instincts to block shots. Now, is he skinny? Sure, he's skinny right now.
Yeah, he is.
That's something that the training staff mafia with the Phoenix Suns can work on. That guy will bulk up. He's 18. He was the youngest guy in the draft. He still has room to grow physically. I'm not concerned about that. He has the mental makeup that you want from a basketball player with the skill sets that makes him a potential stretch four, maybe even a three at some times for this team. I like the potential of Bender. And what I really liked was his floor wasn't as low as Chris's. His ceiling may not be as high, but I'm really excited about it. But what I like most is the fact that Ryan McDonough wasn't afraid in this draft. And I think we actually have audio from the draft room last night.
Do.
And the mental process that Ryan McDonough had.
Introduce a little anarchy. Upset the established order, and everything becomes chaos. I'm an agent of chaos. Oh, and you know the thing about chaos? It's fear.
See, Ryan McDonough was an agent of chaos last night. He threw that draft upside down because he takes Bender when everybody's screaming, you got to take Dunn or you got to trade the pick to somebody that wants Dunn. He committed to the guy he wanted. He got the guy he wanted there. And then you know what he goes? That's not good enough. I want the other guy that I wanted. I'm going to commit highway robbery and get Marquese Chris at the eighth slot.
I agree with it. And you had the tweet also when the deal went down, and it was almost instantaneous. Sacramento makes the pick of Chris, and then within seconds, here comes word that they're making a deal to send him to Phoenix. And you immediately think, how much is this going to cost? Well, it did cost the two other first-round picks, but it did not involve a guard. Now, that's strange to say because we've been screaming for the last couple of years, you got too many guards. But you start thinking about what it would have taken if you're going to include a guard. You know, Sacramento would have been brazen enough to say that Devin Booker guy. It didn't involve a guard. And they sit today and they still have a surplus at guard, which means now they can go out and make another deal to get one of those surplus guards out of here. And I know that Dan Bickley in AZ Central this morning pretty much targeted Brandon Knight. Okay, if it is Brandon Knight, you can go out and make a decent deal to get a player or a pick for Brandon Knight. So, you made the analogy on Twitter that Vlade Divac, who's running basketball operations in Sacramento, was kind of in the same role that Isaiah Thomas was in when Brian Colangelo managed to convince him to take Stephon Marbury and Penny Hardaway's contracts with the Knicks 13 years ago.
Oh, yeah, and that was the last time when things looked super, super bleak. Outside of this last 6 years, it was a team going nowhere. There was some youth, but you were saddled with these albatrosses of contracts for these veterans, and you find the savior in Isaiah Thomas, who really bailed them out of what would have been a terrible situation, and it led to 7 seconds or less. Vlade did that last night for this Suns team. They basically gave away spare parts and got the guy that they wanted, because at 13-28, they weren't going to get high-impact guys. At 8, they got Marquese Chris, which was a guy that they were debating between at number 4. So they got two guys that they wanted at number 4, didn't have to give up anything. And my favorite part is they keep Eric Bledsoe, who I love. He's a great locker room influence. He's a good guy. I talked to him today. He says he's super excited for this team, that his rehab's going great, and this is going to be a fun team to watch on the floor because of the athleticism and the uniqueness of this lineup.
And I think that is the biggest part coming out of this, is they are going to be an extremely entertaining team to watch. By the way, I don't know if you saw it, but DeMarcus Cousins had
I loved it.
A tweet that came out, and I think he said in it, God help me, or something to that effect, when he saw what the Kings were doing with their picks.
With the prayer hand emojis. Can't forget that.
Oh, and it's like, that guy's trying to get out of Sacramento.
Oh, I loved it, because not only did Ryan McDonough break the draft with being an agent of chaos, he broke Boogie Cousins. He got Boogie Cousins so upset that he had to turn to Twitter to basically say, I don't even know what Vlade Divac's doing. I explained the trade to my wife. My wife looked at me and goes, I don't quite understand. Why would you trade a high pick for lower picks? I don't get it. That summed up Kings fans last night.
Yeah. So things are staying pretty much the same in Sacramento. The Suns, on the other hand, have a lot of things to look forward to, and we'll discuss those things with the head coach of the Suns, Earl Watson. Boy, has his job just gotten a lot more fun. And we'll do that. Bill Gutekunst later on. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jeff Munn. This is the Brad Sesmatch Show, and we're glad you're with us on a Friday.
For original, in-depth Arizona sports news you care about, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
Greg Esposito is to my right. I'm Jeff Munn. We're both in for Brad Sesmatch today, the day after the NBA draft, a draft that provided, as drafts often do, a lot of surprises and excitement, and certainly that is the case here with the Phoenix Suns. And to talk about it with us, we welcome to the program the head coach of the Phoenix Suns, Earl Watson. Earl, it's Jeff Munn and Greg Esposito. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Right off the bat, it seems like Ryan McDonough has presented you with a huge boost, especially in the front court. And the guys on ESPN last night, Earl, when the Bender pick was made, I think it was Jalen Rose that said, Ryan McDonough has just presented Earl Watson with a piece of clay that he can mold in Dragan Bender. And I know that that probably isn't what was said verbatim in the war room, but knowing that you were getting Bender, what was the first thought that went through your mind?
First off, we coveted that pick. That was the exact pick that we wanted. We didn't even know if that option would be there. We were kind of surprised he was there at number four. And the skill set he brings is very unique. You get a 7'1", 18-year-old who could potentially grow. He can shoot the ball. He can handle the basketball and then pick and roll and transition. He's a great passer. You know, he has to work on skills, and like every player, you have to continuously get better at your skill. But we know one thing we can't rush, and that's experience of age. That comes naturally, so we're excited about his potential.
So you're sitting there, and you're preparing for pick 13 after that fourth pick, and in the room, you guys realize you have a deal for eight, and you can get Marquise Chris. What was it like in the war room last night? I heard there were some cheers.
Honestly, right after we chose Bender, that was the plan. How can we get Marquise? It didn't just develop naturally. That was the plan. Management had a plan, and they executed that plan within the time frame, which was very remarkable to watch, to see it all unfold. And we didn't know where he would go, but we wanted to try to chase him and stop him. And Ryan did a great job of executing that exact vision.
Now, Marquise has an immense amount of athletic potential. How do you tap into that and help him grow into an effective and great NBA player?
He's also skilled. I think if you watch him play, you understand the athletic ability. You see above the rim plays on offense and defense. But if you really watch, he's great at shooting threes, pin downs, transition. Of course, he can run the court, but pick and pops. He can come off a pin down. He's great at the elbows. So you have two of the most unique players in the draft in Bender and Marquise. And to get both of those in the same draft, to me, is just remarkable. And we're very lucky to have that.
The other thing and we're talking with Earl Watson, the head coach of the Phoenix Suns, Jeff Munn and Greg Esposito in for Brad Sesmatch. The other thing, in a way, and I know that there's been a surplus at the guard position for a while with the Suns, but I was still impressed with the fact that you were able to make that kind of deal. I know some people were kind of, it was a little tough to see Bogdanovich have to go to Sacramento in that deal, but the fact that you were able to make that deal without involving one of those guards, I think also speaks well of Ryan McDonough's ability to cut a deal like that.
Yeah, it's losing Bogdan, who we all thought was a great player, and we still believe so. And, he's one of the best kids I've ever spoken to, young man I've ever spoken to. He's a professional, high character. He can play. He can shoot. He's doing great things in Europe. We also have another young player in the same position by Devin Booker. So it kind of just unfolded that way, and with that pick, we got Marquise Chris, and we all know at the power forward position to have those two guys who can switch and pick and roll, if you see the evolution of basketball, and can also hit the three-point shot. That gives us a unique ability to play with length and size and athletic ability to compete with the OKC, to compete with the Golden State, and the potential of Minnesota moving forward as we continue to pursue and capture what we hope is sooner than later, but our journey towards the playoffs and the championship.
You mentioned the evolution of basketball. Looking at the talent on this roster, is there a potential at some time this season that you could have five guys on the court that could all hit the three and spread that floor out? Because it looks like even with your big men now, you have guys that could do that.
That potential is there, and you see them grow. You think about it, Marquise and Bender are 18 years of age. Devin Booker is 19. I believe Bledsoe just turned 25, and Brendan Knight still might be 24. You see us unfold. Alex Lynn, I believe, is 22. TJ Warren is in his early 20s. Archie. So if you think about this team moving forward in the upcoming years, and you got a veteran leadership of PJ Tucker and Tyson Chandler, and that's those are the rocks you need. And moving forward, and its potential to even still, retain Mirza Teletovic. Now we have true firepower. We have positions that are, interchangeable. Players who can play more than one position in any possession. It gives you unlimited creativity in offense and defense.
The other thing, and we're talking with Earl Watson, the head coach of the Suns, I think the other thing that what transpired last night, Coach, does for you specifically, we talked in our first segment about this is a clear indication that the organization, the management understands that this is a long-term project, that they're going to take their time with this. And I think as a coach, that's beneficial to you too, because I can't imagine that you now have to go into thinking about next year as if I've got to make the playoffs. It sounds to me as if this is an indication to you that, Earl, you've got the time to work on this and build this up.
Well, if you talk to anyone that I know, they'll tell you I'm very impatient, but I'm realistic and my goals are extremely high. So I'm not going into next year thinking I have time to make the playoffs. We're going into next year saying, let's be the best we can be every day, hold each other accountable. This is the program. We're family. Let's be disciplined as we grow, and let's not set limitations on how fast we can grow, doing it the right way with purpose. Be quick, don't hurry. But as you see in Portland, things can happen, and magic can happen at any time. We never want to set the bar low. We want to say, let's aim for the moon and the stars. And whatever happens along the way, we understand it's meant to be. So I'm not taking that approach of years to come.
Well, you talk about the program, and you've brought it up since you took over as the interim coach. But the other day you tweeted out an interesting graphic that kind of shows your perspective on it. It talked about love, character, development, synergy, surrender, belief, and the end goal, the mission, is the playoffs. How much was that influenced by your relationship with John Wooden to come up with this, and how are you going to implement it for your players this year?
Well, if you read the definitions up, first of all, that's our Krebs cycle. That's our program. I got the Krebs cycle. The idea of the Krebs cycle I actually got from my experience with San Antonio. We use it for basketball, for transition D, half court D, and it goes all the way back around the transition D. It's just phases in the Krebs cycle. I took that and mixed it with my experience with Coach Wooden, and we created a Krebs cycle for our program. You implement it just exactly what the definitions are. You learn it. It's kind of like school. You sit down, you learn it, you talk about it. It's in the locker room. It's in my office. And the playoffs is the first mission. There's a lot of missions and levels to the steps of our program and the process of our journey. And you can't say championship until you first consistently get into the playoffs. And once you get into the playoffs, we all know anything can happen at any given time. And we never set limitations. But we have to have a consistent mindset of being in the playoffs. And you see that with LeBron. He's been in the playoffs so many times with Cleveland. He's been there with Miami. They didn't win initially, but it took time. And initially those playoffs changed the championship. And that's our goal. So the mission right now is to get to the playoffs consistently. Once we continue to do that, championship becomes more of a reality, and that mission changes.
Earl Watson, the head coach of the Suns, joining Jeff Munn and Greg Esposito on the Brad Sesmatch Show. You bring up a great example in Portland, because not much was expected of that club this last season, but they did have a nice blend of youth and experience, a solid coach in Terry Stotts, and it all came together, and I don't think it's that much of a reach to say that the kind of same circumstances are in place here. And I don't want to put pressure on you and say, well, you're going to be just like Portland next year. But you make a great case that in those kind of circumstances, you never know. It could be a situation where you could get on a fast track a lot sooner than people expect you to.
Yeah, you know, one thing we focus on is we never focus on winning. We never focus on losing. If we lose, we learn from it. We study it. We have the discipline to let that go. It's a new day. It's a new game. If we win, we embrace it. We understand it. We don't fall in love with it because you're cheated. If you can continue to fall in love with it, you start to cheat the process. We just focus on doing things the right way. And what's most important with a young team is that they learn to be professionals. They play the right way. They play unselfish. They play with passion. And they continue to grow and believe and develop as people, as young people in our community, and embrace the community and the fan base. Once we continue to discipline them in that way, with the talent that we have and the work we put in, and we love to develop young players, as you've seen last year, our development process is a little bit quicker than other programs, but it's the right way we do it. We really put a lot of focus into it. I think winning takes care of itself if you continue to work on the small things that are beyond winning.
Everything I've heard is that Eric Bledsoe has been in the gym working hard. How has he looked to you in his rehab, and how important is he to that locker room going forward?
Eric Bledsoe has been the leader. He's been the most consistent. This is my second summer here in Phoenix. He's been there every day throughout the summer. He doesn't miss days. If he does, he's working out somewhere else, which is rare. Shooting the ball great. He lost a lot of weight. He's toned up. He looks amazing, man. You see him come in and the purpose he has, and just him as a person, just to see him grow as a young father, as a young man in our community, to me is the greatest gift we can have in return as coaches and teachers. He's great, man. The smile is big. He's in the gym. He's getting up shots, and he is extremely excited. He's ready to play. So next week he's taking the team to San Diego for bonding. Coaches are going down there as well. We're doing things beyond the court to create special magic on the court. And everyone's bought in, our leaders are bought in, and the team is bought in. So it's an exciting time right now for our family.
Let Eric know if he's got an extra spot. I'd love to get out of the heat. San Diego sounds fantastic this time of year.
Yeah, it's big time.
Earl Watson, the head coach of the Suns, joining us. Just a couple other things. Bender, obviously, very young, and going back to what I said, the way Jalen Rose described it, a piece of clay that can be molded. It's very early, obviously. It hasn't been 24 hours since the pick has been made. But if you look ahead to next season, do you have to manage his minutes very closely, at least at the outset? Because he's young, because he needs to bulk up, and because he needs to learn about the NBA game?
I've always thought the worst thing to do with, you know, potential is to make a concrete plan. I think with Devin Booker, he came into the league last year and everyone thought Devin Booker needed to get stronger. He needed more experience, maybe send him to the D League, have a great summer league next year, and let's see what can happen. Maybe he can get backup minutes. You have to get into the gym with these young players, and you have to see them, bond with them, just embrace the moment with them, and then you start to learn them. So I can't answer that question. I haven't spent enough time with any of those guys. It's a guy that we haven't talked about yet who I feel like it was a steal in the second round, Tyler Ulis. And the only thing that stopped him from the first round was his height, and to me, you can't change that, so you have to understand the skill. So when you get into the gym with these young guys, and remember, it's a different era of basketball. A lot of these young players are playing close to 200 to 300 games in the summer, in spring. They're coming into the NBA and college with a lot of experience of basketball. What they need to learn is not how to play more. They need more opportunity, and they need to learn the details of the game. And when I say the details, I mean the fundamentals of the game, the boxing out, the outlet pass, the closeout, the defensive slides, the rotations. Because if you look at the skills, Bender can handle, he can shoot. We can't do anything about age. We can't rush years into his life. Marquise can play above the rim, he can shoot. Those are all NBA skills. Tyler Hughes can run a pick and roll. he can score, he can pass. Those are all NBA skills. So we have to focus on the small things, and you never know what can happen, as Devin Booker is prime example.
You talk about the evolution of the game. You were a second-round pick in 2001 with the Sonics. How different is it to go through that process as a player draft-wise and now go through it as a head coach?
It's extremely different. For one, when you're young and you come out of college, you have no idea what to expect. With this being my 16th upcoming season in the NBA, I know what to expect. The only difference for me is sitting in the war room with management, seeing how they execute and the ideas that's thrown on the board and how a plan is created sometimes within seconds to minutes was extremely unique and it was incredible to watch. And I say this all the time, like, our management staff got it done. Our scouts got it done. And Ryan was a silent assassin on the phone the way he operated. It was great with the entire staff. So hats off to them. They don't get a lot of credit because they're not on the court. They're not visible a lot, but those guys, they put in a lot of work. And as a staff, we are very, very lucky to have a unified vision. Even though we don't always agree, we find a way to get it done and execute the overall plan.
Coach, we really appreciate the time considering how busy it's got to be down there. Thanks for joining us, and all the best moving forward with this group of players that are coming in through the draft. Thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Head coach Earl Watson of the Phoenix Suns, and quickly before we go to a break, that's a great question. It's a totally different perspective when you go from being a player in the league to being a coach at draft time.
Yeah, definitely. What I love about Earl is he brings that perspective into everything he does. Having been a player, having gone through these processes, having known a guy like John Wooden, and having experienced being a coach in the Spurs system, he brings that all together. And when he's talking about program, that might not play with guys that are 10-year veterans in the league, you know, longtime vets, but with a roster like this, a lot of young guys, a lot of impressionable guys, he's that calming force, that guiding force that I think can really build something special. And if you haven't seen what we were talking about, his chart that he tweeted out, go look at it, because that to me shows the entire direction of this franchise and the blueprint of where they're going. And I love that he talked about you can't build a championship without thinking, how do we get to the playoffs? How do we build that culture? And how do we move on? And we've heard a lot of talk about culture in the last 6 years out of the organization. A lot of times it sounded like lip service. It's not anymore. Earl Watson is bringing a defined culture and a defined plan on how he wants to run this and truly run it like a program. And he's getting buy-in from guys. And it's great to hear.
And it's exciting to hear him talk about it as well. We come back, we'll take a step back and look at some of the news. There was a big trade last night during the draft. We'll get to some other items around Arizona sports as well. Bill Gutekunst coming up a little bit later on. It's Friday. We'll talk movies, and we'll do all that on the Brad Sesmatch Show. We're just talking during the break. We could talk basketball, Greg and I, for hours. That's Greg Esposito, formerly with the Phoenix Suns, and I'm sure many of you heard him on the Suns Interactive postgame show. I'm Jeff Munn, radio voice of ASU women's basketball, and for the moment, the arena announcer at the Phoenix Mercury, but we're not going to talk about that right now. What we are going to talk about, and I did want to hit a couple of things locally. But let's talk for a moment about something we did discuss during the commercial break. And you made a great point in the first segment about the significance of the Suns draft and the sense of what kind of message it sends, that Ryan McDonough truly is calling the shots. I also, tied to that, think this is also a sign that Robert Sarver understands that it isn't beneficial to the organization for him to be that involved in calling the shots.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. And I think the best thing that can come out of seasons like last season, and being as bad as the Phoenix Suns were, and let's not mince words, they were terrible, is learning. Learning from that experience and understanding, you know, how you can benefit from it. And I think this might have been one of those situations because there was pressure to make the playoffs over the last few years, rightfully so or not, maybe, and I would argue not, you should have been building right this entire time, but I think Devin Booker's emergence made it very clear that if you commit to youth, fans, even in a terrible season, will get excited by the potential that they see in a player. And Devin Booker, in the second half of that season, despite the Suns battling for a top four draft pick, really captured the imagination of Suns fans. And seeing that, I think, made it more palatable to embrace the fact that you need to go with the youth movement. Because if even one of these guys, Chris or Bender, comes close to capturing Suns fans' imaginations the way Booker did last year, you've now built hope. And I wrote about this in my column on sports360az.com today, that Suns fans now have hope. And it's something that has been very foreign outside of the 2013-14 season, because it's been we basically in the basketball desert. And now we see a glimmer of hope out there. That's exciting, and I like that.
There's a baseball analogy. I don't know if we have time to go into it, but very quickly, it's the same kind of deal that the Houston Astros went through for a number of years. Their former owner, Drayton McLean, through the late 2000s into the 2010s, would always go out and sign a bunch of aging veterans to try to keep the team around 500. Oh boy, you know, maybe we got a chance of getting a wild card. When he sold the club to Jim Crane, Crane just said, okay, we got to start over. No more signing these veterans, and we're going to be bad for a couple of years. You could use the Chicago Cubs as the same kind of example. And now you see the benefits. I know Houston isn't having quite the season they had last year, but through the draft, they built it up. They've got a very talented roster. The other thing, I want to get to something else that Earl Watson said, pulling back to the big picture of the draft itself. He said, we didn't think Bender would be there at four. And I'm thinking, okay, we knew where Simmons was going. We knew where Ingram was going. So that means they thought Bender was going to Boston.
Or somebody trading up to that pick to get
him. Okay, that's because I admit the first surprise of last night was that the Celtics at three didn't take Chris Dunn, because everything we had heard was they were zeroing in on Dunn as the guy they wanted at three.
Well, look, Ryan McDonough was Danny Ainge's protege. The two guys that sent this draft into a tailspin were Danny Ainge and Ryan McDonough by the decisions that they made. I want to take a step back, though. You were talking about youth, and I think the math is simple. Would you rather have Hedo Turkoglu, Josh Childress, and Hakeem Warrick, or Dragan Bender, Marquise Chris, and Devin Booker? When you look at it that way, it's simple.
Well, at that time, and I was a lot closer to the team that year when all three of those guys were there, Turkoglu for one quarter of the season. They were all complementary pieces to a team that had Nash, Grant Hill. And in that vein, yeah, that's fine. But that was also a team that just narrowly missed the playoffs. You're right. I think it's better to go this route, and that's been my feeling all along. And I agree with you. If you do that, the public will understand, and they will go along with it. Now, one other thing about the draft I'm going to skip. We could talk about, I think the New Orleans pick of Buddy Hield is another case of a team that had a very bad year with injuries, but is a lot better than they showed last year. And they might have just taken a huge leap by getting Hield in. But I want to talk about the trade. The Magic sent Serge Ibaka to Oklahoma City, I'm getting it backwards. Oklahoma City sent Serge Ibaka to Orlando. The Thunder get Victor Oladipo, Ersan Ilyasova, and the rights to power forward Domantas Sabonis. And immediately the speculation becomes, why did Oklahoma City do this? Are they trying to send a message to Kevin Durant?
For me, I think that Sam Presti and Ryan McDonough should share a cell somewhere for the heist that they pulled off in both cases yesterday, because this deal for Oklahoma City makes sense on two levels. If you're keeping Kevin Durant, it gives you a much better bench. It gives you a potential for youth to grow with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook as they continue to chase a championship. Or on the off chance that Kevin Durant goes somewhere else this offseason, you now have a lot of nice pieces for what will be a minor rebuild there as well. The talent that they got back for Serge Ibaka, a guy who for most of the season was marginalized standing in a corner in that offense thanks to Steven Adams and Enes Kanter, was great. They got a great haul for it. Serge, I don't know what he's going to do for the Magic, and I really don't understand what Orlando's trying to accomplish with their team. A lot of spare parts that I don't think match up together.
You're right about Ibaka. I just thought to the point, especially, and I remember all the attention that Steven Adams got, especially in the conference finals, and he really emerged as a guy who can be a very solid player for Oklahoma City going forward, which makes it easier to deal Ibaka away. You wonder what exactly Orlando's thinking was, unless they were just trying to shuffle the deck a little bit in terms of trying to just remake the image of the club somehow. Otherwise, I don't know what the deal was.
I don't get it either. Do you mind if I hijack the show for a minute?
Sure, go ahead.
I think we need to induct somebody into the Suns Ring of Honor.
Oh, yes. Impromptu. You said you were going to do that on Twitter today, and I want you to do that.
Impromptu here. Now, we all know Al McCoy should be the next person to go in the Suns Ring
no
of
question.
Honor.
No,
without a doubt.
Don't get me started on that.
We can do that another time during the summer when we're filling in for Brad. But there is somebody last night that earned a spot in the Suns Ring of Honor, and we got to put him up there right now. Vlade Divac, I love you, my friend. You are easily the best Suns front office member we've had in years. We talked about it since Isaiah Thomas, the Knicks GM, helped out the Suns front office. What Vlade Divac did last night to give the Suns the number 8 pick, we couldn't have asked for better. So, Vlade, you deserve a spot up there. And in place of a number, because you didn't play for the team, we're going to put a cigarette up there since that's what you were best known for, being a chain smoker in the NBA. So we're going to have your picture, your name, and a cigarette going up in that Suns Ring of Honor because you, sir, easily helped the Suns the most last night in the NBA draft. Thank you very much, Vlade.
I think that's very, very, very well deserved. Just a quick thing as we're going to break. Arizona plays Oklahoma State today, College World Series. They got to beat the Cowboys twice to get into that championship round. And it sounds like they're going to burn through more pitchers and rack up more innings and ruin more arms if they keep going in the series. Yeah, that's a Sun Devil talking. We'll deal with that another time. We're going to go to the movies with Bill Gutekunst, who might have a thought or two about the draft, too. We'll get Goody's thoughts on a number of movies, including Independence Day, coming up on the Brad Sesmatt Show.
Welcome back into the Brad Sesmatt Show. I am obviously not Brad Sesmatt. I am Greg Esposito, columnist and podcaster for Sports 360 AZ, joined by one of my favorite people in sports, Jeff Munn. Super excited to have one of our favorites in terms of movies. It is AZ Central and Gannett chief film and media critic Bill Gutekunst. Bill, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. I'm at the Giant Volleyball Festival in downtown Phoenix. And I have a nice echo to my voice because the only place quiet enough to do this is a men's room.
Is that the weirdest place you've ever called in for an interview?
I'm trying to think about that. It's certainly not the first one I've ever conducted in a men's room. Once when I was a TV critic, I was at this TV thing that we did every year, twice a year in California, and I was trying to talk to this actress, and her personal publicist didn't want me to talk to her. So she shepherded her into the women's room so that I could not follow. And I thought about it, and I thought, you know what? It's probably not worth it.
Bill, I'm thinking. Now, are you there on personal reasons at a volleyball tournament?
Yes, my daughter's playing.
Oh, outstanding. Okay. I know that they require versatility amongst the riders at AZ Central.
I did sports for a long time. That's all right.
That's right. You did. Okay, among the films this week that we're talking about, and I'm going to go off what I've seen on the trailers, Independence Day, which is you can talk more about the background on this remake sequel, but when I've seen the trailers, Bill, it almost sounds like they're giving away the ending in the trailer, which probably is not true, but I almost get the sense from watching the trailer that the Earth wins and we move on.
Well, typically, yeah. I don't think it's too much of a spoiler to say that the Earth typically wins in these kind of movies. There was this. I was thinking about this last night on the way home from seeing it. There was this Nicolas Cage movie once where there were all these this series of numbers kept coming up, and he was a mathematician or something, and he finally figured out what it was. It was going to be the end of the world, and it actually ended. I mean, everybody died. But no, the secret to this movie is, and I don't think this is a spoiler either, it's all set up so that if it makes a gazillion dollars, they will be making another one. It's all set up for a sequel.
For everything I've seen about this film, it's pretty apropos that you're calling us from a men's restroom, because it hasn't seemed like it's much of a quality film.
Yes, you can flush this one away. It's stupid. And I mean, I get that. I think this is what I said in my review. I get that there is, you know, that this is not, you know, serious cinema or whatever. And I also get that there's a place in the world for really cool action. But I also get that it doesn't have to be stupid, because I have seen Mad Max Fury Road, and that was a great action movie that was also a great movie. But this, I mean, I guess, you know, gazillions of people will go see it. But other thing I don't understand about movies like this, and this has been the case with some other movies recently, they talk about the first one like it was some sort of like Citizen Kane of alien invasion movies or something. And it wasn't. It was just big and dumb and stupid and kind of fun. At least it had Will Smith in it, you know. And this certainly retained the big and dumb part.
Well, that's good, because I wasn't expecting much from an original film that ended because of a Mac virus and a plane violating a spaceship. So I wasn't expecting a whole lot out of it.
Well, there, you know, as you recall in the beginning, a big deal was made out of the fact that that was a Mac. And I don't know if Apple was happy about that or not, but there are no such product mentions in this one.
I also think,
like,
go ahead.
Well, they also, like, Judd Hirsch at some point takes over a school bus, and he doesn't say, like, I'm going to take this Ford school bus or anything. So.
Well, I was going to say, you mentioned there has to be a place in the world for certain things. There has to be a place in the world for Judd Hirsch, too. Because,
and this is his place.
Yeah, and I'm not even going to go deep into that subject.
I think you should have stayed in just Taxi reruns and avoided this.
Or the movie Teachers with Nick Nolte and Joe Beth Williams.
We've now gone off the rails. Let's get back on the rails and talk about a movie that I have some high hopes for, Free State of Jones. And I know you interviewed Matthew McConaughey earlier this week. Please tell me this one isn't as disappointing as Independence Day.
No, it's not as disappointing as Independence Day, but it is disappointing. McConaughey is not disappointing. It's what's wrong with this movie is it's a really cool part of history. I mean, it's based on a real guy. This guy was in the Civil War. He was I think he was a conscientious objector, but he served as a nurse for the Confederate Army. But he saw the Confederate, you know, soldiers looting Southerners. You know, they were supposed to have this 10% tax where they took 10% of what you have, but they were taking like 90%. And this made him mad, and he stood up to him, which made him a deserter. So they were going to hang him. So he kind of runs off to Mississippi into the woods and the bayou and stuff. And he gets a group of runaway slaves, and then they all kind of form this big band, and they fight against the South. And there's at one point this guy says, "What are we fighting for, the North now?" And he says, "No, we just happen to have the same enemy." So up to this point, it all sounds very interesting, right? And it is. McConaughey is very good, but the problem is they make him completely one-dimensional. He might as well have a halo. I mean, he's a really kind of an interesting guy. He had this common law wife that he had like four kids by, and then he had like nine children by this runaway slave that he eventually lived with her and made his common law wife live in a house off on the same farm, but not in the main house. And, you know, but all that stuff is just kind of glossed over. It's too bad. But McConaughey's pretty good, and he is always fun to talk to.
Yeah, I was going to say you did an interview with McConaughey. We got about 2 minutes left, so just a quick thought from you about McConaughey. There seems to be, to me, in Hollywood, a feeling of people can't make up their minds about him, and there's some segment of Hollywood that's actually getting burned out on him. Am I reading that right?
I think you're probably right. I think that that's what happens once I mean, what was the big story in him? The big story was he's a really talented actor, started making these stupid romantic comedies, wasting his talent. He decides, and I've talked to him several times on the way back up, which has been kind of fun. And he said, I just decided I'm not taking those jobs anymore. I'm going to just take good stuff. May has good stuff. Everybody loves him. He's great in even on TV, on HBO, on True Detective or whatever. But now he reached his peak. He won his Oscar. So what's the story from there? And, you know, as all of us in the media know, as much fun as it is to build people up, I mean, the media takes great delight in tearing them back down again.
All right, rapid fire. Blake Lively clinging to a dinghy with a giant shark. Is The Shallows worth my $10 this weekend?
I thought it was stupid, but a lot of people loved it. I mean, you think of the most obvious antecedent would be Jaws, which was about greed and hubris and fear and all this stuff. And this is basically like a really good-looking woman in a tiny bikini with a shark between her and the shore.
$10 then.
Exactly. I was going to say, that probably makes it sound a little better than it really is. It's all right. I mean, but my tagline, I think, for my review was like, I sort of played off the Jaws thing. You know, we're going to need a bigger boat. But I think on this one, they said, no, we're going to need a smaller bikini.
Wow. Okay, well, that just got my attention. Bill, I'm going to leave you with this thought, Bill. I came up with a little trivia note about classic TV. I didn't know this until 2 days ago. Henry Winkler was not the original choice to play Arthur Fonzarelli on Happy Days. When he went in to read for that role, they were about to give the role to, drum roll please.
Was it John Travolta?
Mickey Dolenz.
Ah.
Of the Monkees. He was going to be the Fonz, and I'm thinking, no. 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 Not a chance. So
I'm kind of glad, too. I like to think of him as a monkey. So.
Yeah, and that's a subject for another day, trust me. Bill, thanks. Have a good weekend.
You too. See you guys.
Bill Gutekunst, AZ Central Gannett Chief Film and Media Critic.
You want to go another 2 hours?
Yeah.
I say we make
just keep
e-work
rolling
overtime.
Along, and it's the internet, and we can do whatever we want. There's also a lock on the door, and we can do whatever we want.
Yeah, you guys
point.
Can stay as long as you'd like. I might not be here for the duration, but you guys are more than welcome.
Well, what have you done other than chime in then?
I called the guests, and
I got a phone in here. I can handle
that. Yeah, see, again, you don't need me. I'm just a guy.
You got a big weekend plan?
No.
You're going to watch TCU at the College World Series?
I am, and I'm covering the Copa third place
match tomorrow. Oh,
that's right.
USA plays tomorrow night in Glendale.
Mm-hmm. Expecting a relatively big crowd, about
50,000
people.
Isn't it amazing, by the way, how many things they've put in that stadium in the non-football months?
Monster truck pulls, soccer.
It all
RV
sells
RV
Cokes
shows,
and beers and hot dogs.
Volleyball tournaments.
Hey, yeah.
Concerts.
Please tell me there's a place serving food there called the Copacabana this weekend.
There has to be, right?
I've got all sorts of bad puns. I'm here all weekend. Tip your waitresses, please.
So it's who USA and who?
Who cares?
Who cares?
USA.
You're
what else do we
anything.
Need?
It's the third place match.
Oh, okay. So it doesn't matter.
I've been following it closely, as you can tell.
What time does it start?
5 o'clock.
For TV, obviously.
Yep.
Because otherwise, they would play the match a little bit later in the evening. Yeah, we didn't get to talk about that at all, but it's kind of zipped by. And I did make a very passing reference. I'm waiting for music to tell us we got it. Oh, there it is.
They're playing Columbia, by the way. Thanks, Google. You're the best.
Yeah.
See, who needs a producer? We got Google,
yeah.
too.
It's true.
So I'll tell you what, we're just going to stay here all weekend and continue to talk about sports and other things. You can get the latest in sports through azcentral.com or this here website, sports360az.com. And I'm sure there'll be lots to cover this weekend. And obviously, you can stick around here for more of the Brad Sesmatch Show on a Friday. Thanks for being with us.